This is an ABC podcast.
Tell me, have you read Richard Glover's fine book, The Land Before Avocado? How we did things way back before avocados came for breakfast and when baristas were mispronounced lawyers. I still do things that way. Use a typewriter, have no mobile phone, and use my brain for information storage. Yes, I know it's 2017, and that the PM, the Prime Minister, is Billy McMahon, without having to look it up. Dr. Max Halupka is much more modern. He also studies the shape of things to come at the University of Canberra, and how our tech interacts with real life. Max.
The world is changing, and this shouldn't come as a surprise to anyone that's lived in it for any prolonged period of time. Technology is opening new doors every day. And these are shaping the world in which we live in. From smartphones and Fortnite to voice-controlled homes and virtual reality, the internet has fundamentally changed the world, and it continues to do so. 10 years ago, the first iPhone had only been available for about a year, maybe two and a bit. If you wanted to listen to music down at the beach, you needed a CD player and a couple of very big batteries. And so the world is changing and fast. However, I want to talk to you about two very important changes that are happening. Ones that we're really only just beginning to understand. I want to introduce two new concepts to you about how technology continues to shape our world and what this might mean for our society moving forward. The first concept I want to speak to you about is the idea of technological transactive memory partners, and it's a really jargony mouthful that doesn't feel very good. But what it means basically is memory partners, and it's something very important, and it's changing society at the cognitive level. Now, this may come as a surprise to some of you, but we are rarely the repository of all knowledge in our lives. We don't tend to keep everything internal. What we do is we cognitively offload. We give other people in our lives, be it at work or home or with friends, bits of information to look after. And then our brain goes, you know, okay, we know this information because we know where it's located. I don't know my mother's birthday because I'm a terrible son, but my wife does. She acts as my memory partner. And it's important to note that while we are often unaware of these partners, we can begin to find them in our own lives when we start to reflect. Now, some recent work has emerged from the cognitive science discipline that suggests that the internet is acting as a technological-based memory partner, an externalized repertoire for explanatory knowledge. You may think you know something, say about, let's say, Trump and his wall, all right? It's all over the news, all over your information feed. Your brain is gone. This information is good. It's located here. You know this information. You know this information. That's the key trick that your mind has started to play on you. That information is actually knowledge that you keep internally. What the brain fails to help you realize is that you don't actually know the information. All you really know is where the information is located. And this is a key finding. People are no longer differentiating between knowledge stored internally and that stored online. Individuals are presented with an abundance of information and have become incredibly adept at familiarizing themselves with a range of different topics. However, the very mechanisms by which we access this information is also serving to inflate our sense of self-knowledge, making everyday citizens believe that they know more about a topic than they actually do. Furthermore, the digital environments support this information inflation, such as social media or news outlets, undermines the ability of the everyday person to reflect upon new political information or assumed knowledge. So the very places that you get your daily information from are some of the key catalysts in this change in human cognition. Not unrelated here is the second key concept, one a little bit easier to visualize. I call it the shrinking web, and it's exactly what it sounds like. The web's getting smaller. So let's quickly differentiate here between the internet and the web. They're two very different things, and that difference is actually very important. Simply put, the web sits on top of the internet. The internet is an endless sea of building blocks, while the web is a densely constructed city. Applications such as Skype or Netflix use the internet, for example, but not always the web. They are separate entities which have made use of those building blocks, and much like the web, sit atop them. And so the web is this largely observable online realm that you move through every day. It's websites and social media and Google, and it's getting smaller. Not 10 years ago, the web was a very different place, home to a range of unique sites, each providing unique services, which serve to differentiate them within the broader online market. However, recent business practices have been driven by two central notions: the embedding of sites and vertical development. On the first, embedding of sites. You know, your Facebook is linked to your Twitter, which is linked to your Reddit, which is linked to Pinterest, which is linked to Instagram. It is key pillar sites sharing cross-platform functionality. Key pillar sites. To explain the second, vertical development, let's return to that building blocks metaphor. The web 10 years ago was a European city, sprawling and horizontally stretched. Sites served specific functions, with individuals calling upon a range of platforms to satisfy their needs. And to this end, the internet expanded outwards, with new sites created to satisfy new demands. However, contemporary web is much closer to a Japanese city, highly concentrated and built upwards. Rather than building outwards, those most popular key sites have begun to build upwards, increasing the usability of their own platform and decreasing the need for competing sites or applications. The goal here is to provide users with everything they may need, so there's less desire to leave the site itself. This business practice sees websites shift from serving distinct purposes as functioning as one-stop shops. These two emerging practices result in a common theme: the herding of users into a handful of common digital spaces. If we conceive of the web as being built upwards rather than outwards, we arrive at this notion of a shrinking web. The internet, as a near limitless field of digital building blocks, remains unchanged. Rather, is the web itself, the space primarily used by the public, which is shrinking in size. What's this all mean? You know, well, I'll leave you with a few couple of thoughts, because this is what theorists do. We give you thoughts and you think about them. And that's how we change the world. First, we are witnessing a fundamental change in human cognition, in which online information consumption is impacting the capacity of the everyday citizen to recognise the limitations of their own self-knowledge. Here, contemporary society is confronted by a constant stream of issues, but has only a surface-level understanding of their complexities. Yet, this same populace believes that they have a strong understanding of these issues. Increasingly, people have an inflated sense of self-knowledge and do not recognise the extent to which that knowledge is stored online. Second, the shrinking web has and will continue to have an impact on the way in which content is consumed and provided. As I've said, the shrinking web is comprised of two central notions: the embedding of sites and vertical development. Together, these features result in the herding of online citizens into a handful of common digital spaces. Third, the shrinking web will have a profound effect on society if they are influenced by this change in human cognition. The everyday person will be exposed to an increasing range of news and political content, feeding into an inflated sense of self-assessed knowledge. Therefore, the herding of users into a handful of common digital spaces, we can expect the process of the overestimation of knowledge to be exacerbated. And finally, and perhaps most importantly, individuals in a society influenced by this change in how digital content is consumed and provided will construct their political beliefs, identities, and political participation aspirations based upon these illusions of self-assessed knowledge. A change in both how information is provided and how it is consumed has the potential to fundamentally shift how our society works. And I hate to say it, but with the world the way it is, we may already be seeing the ramifications of these changes. Thank you.
I think we are. Dr. Max Hlubka from the University of Canberra. His speciality is how IT interacts with politics and democracy, what's left of it. Next week, epidemiology. I'm Robin Williams.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.